Hi, my name is Katie McLean.
And I'm Jim Fleury.
And we're here to talk to you about the pedagogical resources on the Adaptation Today website. Adaptation Today seeks to provide pedagogical resources to encourage and support the study of adaptation, content like syllabi, assignments, and lesson plans. All submitted material will be peer-reviewed by the editors of Adaptation Today and open to moderated community feedback.
Each year, we'll provide three review periods for pedagogical resources, all due on a rolling basis, with lesson plans due by January 31st, syllabi due by May 31st, and assignments due by September 30th, and blog posts on a monthly basis.
We hope you will consider submitting as well as reviewing these resources. Please see further details on the Adaptation Today website. Welcome to Adaptation Today, a podcast for anyone interested in learning more about adaptation and how to study it. I am Gracie Bain, and today I'm talking to some of the contributors and editors of an upcoming collection on authenticity and adaptation, part of the Palgrave Studies for Adaptation and Visual Culture, coming out in spring 2025, a collection that explores the contemporary use of authenticity and how it intersects with adaptation studies. So I'm particularly excited to talk about this topic because as someone that studies the adaptation of historical events, authenticity is often a thing that comes up a lot. I'm with Drs. Christina Wilkins, Tom Leach, and James Taylor. If you want to take a moment to just introduce yourself to the audience.
Yeah, my name's Christina Wilkins. I teach film and creative writing and specialize in adaptation studies, and I'm at the University of Birmingham.
Okay, I'm Tom Leach. I teach in the English department at the University of Delaware.
I'm James Taylor. I teach in film and television studies at the University of Warwick.
Great. I know everyone, I don't know, I'm just very excited for this. So we'll go ahead and get into the questions. So kind of the first question I have is a pretty broad one that anyone can answer, but why this particular collection now?
So if everyone's okay with me just jumping in here, it arose out of the 2023 Adaptation Studies Conference. I hosted it at the University of Birmingham, and I was particularly interested in this concept of authenticity because it's one that just keeps coming up. And I've noticed that students will bring it up quite a lot as well, in seminars, in their essays, and in online spaces as well. I just noticed this idea of authenticity being really fundamental, just keep kind of rearing its head. And I thought about this in conjunction with adaptation, and I think it works really well because what we understand as authenticity is fundamentally very flawed, but it's this idea of truth or kind of realness. And I think that can be seen as almost antithetical to adaptations, but really because the concept's so flawed, I don't think it is.
Yeah, I feel like I feel like a lot of my students, when we talk about adaptation, even in just in like a world literature class, often introducing adaptation as kind of a way to think about the text that we're studying. But the first thing that they usually go to is the realness of it. Is it truthful? Is it truthful to the original? So that absolutely makes sense. And this is kind of an addition to that question, but what, Christina, you've kind of talked about what drew you to this topic, but Tom and James, what drew y'all to this topic?
I feel that James should go first, but I will, even though this will make the discussion a little bit lopsided. I wasn't particularly drawn to this topic. I've always been suspicious of the idea of authenticity. That we find it seems to be most influentially in 20th century theory in the work of Walter Benjamin, who talks about the aura as establishing the authenticity of works of art in the age of mechanical reproduction. But it increasingly seems to me that Benjamin has been misunderstood broadly, that he's not saying that authenticity is an inherent quality in originals, but rather that it's a quality that audiences project onto originals, along, I would add, with the idea of originality. So what drew me to this project apart from being sort of dragged into it, kicking and screaming, was the provocativeness of, or rather my curiosity about the relationship between two different implications of the term authenticity. One of them is the one that your students use, Gracie, truth or accuracy. And the other is a norm that often comes up in discussions of, in industrial discussions of adaptation, definitive adaptations. You know, this is the adaptation, and after this, there don't need to be any more adaptations. I was very interested in the possibility of trying to work out a relationship between truthful adaptations and definitive adaptations. And it seemed to me that a kind of text that would be fruitful to examine in that connection was nonfictional texts, particularly news stories. The problem, and Christina pointed this problem out to me early on in the process, is people don't talk about news stories as if they were authentic. That's not a term that they use, but they do use all these other terms without a very critical sense of what they mean. And trying to establish a more thoughtful sense of what they meant was the challenge for me. So I'm sorry, James, you still have, I think, about a minute and a half.
So, yeah, I guess my response maybe links to both Tom's and Christina's. My immediate response to the idea of authenticity and adaptation are comparable to Tom's in that I kind of had an immediate negative response to that idea. And maybe due to the fact that it seemed on the surface to be quite close to questions of fidelity, you know, which is kind of very widely seen as this kind of bad object in adaptation studies, this kind of idea that we need to get away from. But the more I thought about it, the more it raised kind of new interesting questions to explore in adaptation studies, and offered interesting ways to reframe existing debates, existing issues. Yeah, and, you know, it connects very interestingly in terms of what both Christina and Tom were saying to issues of value. You know, there's questions of why is authenticity valued so much in contemporary culture. So, yeah, all of these interesting questions and new ways into existing questions, I think, began to reveal the value or the interest of looking at authenticity. And this really came out at that conference Christina held, the different ways people were exploring it, applying the concept there.
Yeah, I appreciate all of your answers, because I think too, when, as someone that is very new into adaptation studies, when I think of the question of authenticity, I think I immediately think of fidelity. And, you know, just, and I know that most of our listeners will know what fidelity criticism is, but for those that may not, but so fidelity criticism, this idea that it needs to closely adhere to the original, and the closer it is to the original, the better it is. And how we've moved away from that, but we're still talking about authenticity, is a really interesting one. So, If you could, I'm wondering, speaking of definitions like fidelity criticism, does the book have a set definition of authenticity? How are the contributors using it? I mean, you can speak broadly to the book, or even how are you as authors that are writing in this book talking about or defining authenticity?
So to clarify as well, because I know that Tom and James were talking about their skepticism about authenticity. I don't think authenticity is a good thing. This concept of, and I'm always drawn to things that I dislike inherently. So I write better about things that that I, you know, don't think are, I think are flawed. And I think that's why, that's what comes up in the whole idea of authenticity through the collection. And the way I'm positioning it and framing it through the introduction and my chapter in the book is really about this flawed idea that is a kind of an unfixed concept, very subjective, but it's being used in a way that shows that these assumptions about adaptation are also flawed as well, because of this focus on truth or realness, we've become too focused on putting these really tight parameters of what truth or realness looks like, and we kind of lose sight of what else is there. Other contributors that aren't James and Tom have used it variously. Some of them have used it kind of positively, but that depends on the approach that's been taken. The more theoretical the chapter is, I found that the more critical that the authors are of the concept.
I think in my chapter, I probably ultimately wasn't, well, I don't think I am very critical of the concept. I guess, you know, taking the idea of authenticity, I found it enabled me to explore kind of a question, a topic that I had been interested in for a bit, the question of thinking about adaptations of H.P. Lovecraft and, you know, this idea of the Lovecraftian that is constantly discussed in relation to Lovecraft's work, adaptations and elements of Lovecraft that can be found elsewhere in popular culture. So the framework of, or the idea of authenticity, kind of prompted me to think through, okay, what might a framework look like for exploring this question of authenticity in the Lovecraftian, what makes something authentically Lovecraftian. And for me, I found that useful in that it ultimately enabled me to really focus on particular elements of his prose at the, you know, while discounting others, and to really think through strategies for adapting those into film and television. So yeah, I came up with a very kind of specific understanding of authenticity to apply to adaptations of a single author, but that, yeah, allowed me to, as I say, just explore what authenticity might allow us to do, what kind of framework it might allow us to construct.
My journey, my trajectory was almost exactly the opposite of James's. I started out using the idea of authenticity, but the more I worked with it, the more frustrated I became with it. And I ended up not wanting to talk about authenticity at all, but wanting to talk about definitiveness and fidelity and truthfulness. And at one point I suggested to Christina, well, you know, there's only a brief section in the essay that even references authenticity. Why don't we just take it out? It's probably the weakest part of the essay. But then we agreed that if we took it out, people would wonder, why is this essay in this book? It doesn't have anything to do with the subject. So I like to think that I had inadvertently engaged on a project to deconstruct the idea of authenticity so completely that in a perfect world, I wouldn't even be using the word anymore. Eat your heart out, Roland Barthes.
That's the tagline of the episode, is eat your heart out, Roland Barthes. Like, that's the name of this episode. I think that's so fascinating. And this is a very, I can't think of a synonym that sounds smarter than lame. I'm sure that there is, there's many, but, thank you. I speak for our audience that, it's not fully established yet, maybe. But the thing that I think about is so cool with edited collections, and I recognize that this is a kind of a lame thing to say, is just the variety, right? And like the diversity of conversations you have about the topic. And so that is just absolutely fascinating. I was wondering, I've asked you about sort of about the content or the, you know, the overarching kind of thing. Could you briefly explain the four major sections of this book, just for people that are listening that want to read it and want to approach the book knowing maybe a particular section that they want to go to?
Yeah, so it's kind of broadly four sections born out of the chapters and how to link them theoretically. The first one is about theorizing authenticity. So, you know, we've got Camilla Elliott in that section in a really, really engaging chapter about how to theorize authenticity in adaptation studies, which I think some of you, well, James and Tom, you would have seen her paper at the conference, and it was fantastic. And obviously that continued in her chapter. And then should be having another chapter on adaptation theoretically there. The second section is on authorship and authenticity. So James is included in this section to think about how a focus on a single author, and this can be or can lead audiences to look for a particular understanding of that author's and something that's authentic to that author. So we've got a couple of texts there, including, you know, Shakespeare, because you can't get away from Shakespeare, especially not when it comes to authenticity. And then the third section is on this question of medium. So then we have chapters on things like online theatre. My chapter on another theatre chapter on a theatre adaptation and this question of authenticity and mental illness. And another chapter on fraud from Ryan, which I think will work really well there. And then finally, the last one is about this question of audiences and time, which is thinking about the way in which the concept of authenticity has changed over time. And Tom nicely ends the book with his chapter on news, which, you know, I think rounds it off quite nicely, because we've started with Camilla arguing about this idea of authenticity and adaptation and Tom effectively dismantling it. So I think it works nicely as a journey to go through the book in that way.
Yes, that does sound really interesting. And kind of as we're even just like, I don't know, you're talking about the book and the collection and the things that are in there. I'm thinking about new ways to think about authenticity. I just saw a Western cowboy adaptation of Macbeth, but they said Macbeth like Macbeth, because it took place in Oklahoma. And so even just like as you were going through the sections of the book and mentioning Shakespeare, I was thinking of new things. So that's fascinating. So I do have probably a personally motivated question, because I'm just interested by this question. That I'm using having y'all here for my advantage. But I want to quote the description or a part of the description for the book and kind of get your thoughts on it. So for instance, it seems like one of the questions that you talk about is how can an adaptation be authentic in an increasingly personalized and algorithm-driven world? And you mentioned medium and online theater and that kind of thing. Can you talk a little bit more about how that's engaged in the book?
Oh, that's a difficult question. I don't think it's dealt with explicitly. I'll say that now. I think everyone touches upon these ideas, and I think that's what has driven this desire to think about authenticity. Because when I was trying to, you know, consider, you know, why am I thinking about this topic? It's to me, it's this rise of the dominance of the online space, and the way in which this separation between the virtual and then the real, mm-hmm. and which one is the real self and which one is the authentic self. Mm-hmm. And then we get things like deep fakes and fake news, you know, links to very nicely to Tom's chapter. But in thinking about how specific adaptations can be authentic, I don't think they can personally, which is, I think, what might arise, because they change with context, because authenticity is so subjective. And if you're thinking about this desire for, you know, a personalized view of the world that the algorithm offers us, one text will not be authentic to someone else. So I just don't think that that's possible. But it's one of those questions I wanted to pose because it makes people think. But I wonder if Tom has any thoughts, because he looks like he does.
Yeah, if I could follow up on that. And here I'm not trying to recapitulate my argument or the argument of anybody else in the book, but rather to address your question directly, Gracie. I'm skeptical, or at least I'm interested in the apparent contradiction or conflict between the rise of algorithms and the persistence of authenticity. When I go into Netflix, Netflix often says to me, you might like this. And I think we've all had the experience of thinking, no, you think you know what I want, but you do not know what I want. We've had that experience so often that I think that I often tend to overlook the fact that algorithms aren't exactly, in this case, foreign bodies reaching into you and trying to change your tastes. Instead, they're a feedback loop. They're saying, well, we know that you've watched this, and we know that you've watched this, and so we think that you might like to watch this. This is not that much different from what our spouses and our friends say to us and what we say to them. So clearly, we think that some kinds of algorithms are not only harmless, but beneficial. But other kinds of algorithms are not. And the kinds of algorithms that we're the most suspicious of course, tend to be associated with machines. But in the case of Netflix, it's an algorithm that's mediated by technology, but it's based on a very traditional kind of interpersonal technology. The only difference between Netflix and my wife is that when I make faces at my wife, it changes her behavior. And when I make faces at my TV, Netflix goes right on doing what it's doing. I'm not sure that you'll think that that's germane to the question that you're asking, but I found that thinking about authenticity has helped me to think about algorithms in a new way.
We're not far off though with the faces, Tom, because if you think about the face, well, particularly on phones and Face ID and tone of voice and what they offer you and with, you know, different social media platforms, maybe we won't be so far off. You know, have you seen the Black Mirror episode, Jonah's Awful?
Yes. Yeah.
So within, James, have you seen it?
James has seen it. James is going to talk about it.
Yeah. So basically within this, a Netflix, it was not Netflix, Streamberry is the version of Netflix in that universe. They make a show about this woman's life, and you find out that it's like layers and layers. And they're making different shows, adapting the lives of other of real life people, but from everywhere, because they're trying to target more and more niche markets. So I can see a world where you can alter and change an adaptation to make it authentic to you, particularly with, you know, AI and how it's changing and shaping things, that this idea of an authentic adaptation might become even more false or kind of constructed or contrived the more technology advances.
Interestingly, my interpretation of that quote, which Gracie used to spark this conversation, was quite different. I think rather than trying to, or rather than seeing it as aligning authenticity with algorithmically generated content, personally generated content, I was seeing it as distinguishing the idea of authenticity from the algorithmically generated content and I guess I was thinking of that in the sense of authenticity suggests something objective, to go back to a word that was used earlier, some kind of objective truth, whereas the algorithmically generated content is something much more individualized. Mm. So in that sense, authentic might be seen as kind, or a desire for the authentic might be seen as a response to or a desire to kind of escape from a world that is where everything is dictated by AI and kind of hyper-personalized for us by computers.
I think that's where it kind of comes from, to me anyway, that because we are, and this is going to make it sound very cynical, but I am quite cynical of the internet, because we're trapped in these structures of the online space where our versions of ourselves, our digital selves, and real selves are kind of highly constructed. Not that they're not anyway, but it makes it more apparent in the, I think it makes it more apparent in the online space. And because the online space is so much broader than the kind of social circles that we would have originally found ourselves in, I think people are thinking about authenticity as a way to differentiate themselves, a way to mark themselves out. And because, you know, if somebody was just like behaving normally or as socially expected, you wouldn't say, oh, they're just being their authentic self. Usually that term, when, you know, when someone is being their authentic self or being authentic to themselves, is usually a behavior that either goes against a norm or something. And I think that's kind of notable that this drive towards authenticity is, to me, a symptom of the online space has reminded us that we're very small in the grand scheme of things.
But perhaps not so small that we can't still exert power or seek to exert it over those spaces. Mm. What both James and Christina have been saying reminded me of how I spent the last 24 hours. Last night, my wife was determined to watch the Democratic National Convention on TV. And I was very grateful that I was having dinner with a friend in Baltimore and could not watch. But inevitably, when I was driving home, I turned on the car radio and I listened to some of the speeches. And when I got home, I watched the last 2 hours of the convention together with my wife, because it seemed disloyal to her, one might say inauthentic, to my wedding vows, to go to bed while she was still up. And of course, Joe Biden was still up too. And I thought, you know, it's even later for him than it is for me. That was literally not true, because it was an hour earlier for him than it was for me. But I thought it's more of a stretch for him than for me. So we watched all these proceedings, which I have to say I found insufferably tedious. Not distasteful, just boring. And then when we got up this morning and went to eat breakfast, I went out and brought in the newspapers and spread them on the kitchen table. And the first thing that my wife said was, "So what do they say about the convention?" Hmm. And I thought, we just spent hours watching the convention. Are you looking to get more information, like stuff that you missed? But no, she wasn't. She was looking to not to have people bracket her experience, but to use her experience to pass judgment on the news sources. So she wanted simultaneously to get information, but it was not information about the truth of what had happened. It was information about how different newspapers were spinning what had happened so that she could compare her memories, which of course were sacrosanct and authentic, and use them as a criterion to judge what the papers had said. Punchline. Of course, the convention went much too late into the night for the papers to say anything about it. And the most interesting graphic that we got in any of them was a photograph of the convention space empty before anyone arrived. I'll let you three decide how resonant that was with all of us.
It's really, I mean, talking about even the convention night and online spaces and algorithms, I'm thinking of, so like any good millennial, I don't really do TikTok, but I watch the TikTok reels that come to Instagram 2 weeks after they've been on TikTok. But lately, my For You page on Instagram is Kamala Harris, right? And so particularly the videos where people have isolated her quote about a coconut tree, and then like putting that on other very popular music that's happening right now. And the way that like they're using the, like that sound bite of the coconut tree that has become very popular on the internet to kind of to campaign for her in this really interesting way of combining that sound bite with maybe music that's very popular specifically this summer. And so when I read that quote, I was thinking of like my For You pages that are taking something like political content or cultural things that are happening. And then, is it called, stitching it on, to another video. And so, that's all of that is very interesting. And I'm excited to read that in the book. And I think that's going to continue to be a conversation, at least in my classrooms. And you know, I teach writing and we're talking about authenticity and using, particularly AI and that kind of thing. So, just to kind of end it, is there anything that anyone else wanted to add about this book?
One of the reasons I was really looking forward to reading this book as opposed to contributing to it is that I wanted to see what a bunch of intelligent people had to say about authenticity.
I guess the thing that I have thought about when I've been reading around for writing the introduction is how philosophical this concept is and how mired in philosophy a lot of the scholarship is. And I think because the way it's used in culture is not that sense at all. And I think adaptation therefore kind of provides this nice bridge between philosophical understandings of the term and cultural understandings. And I want to see if that can be done or make it slightly more accessible to think about it more critically rather than, you know, having to engage with philosophical books in order to think about the topic. As someone who whose first subject, or sorry, first discipline is not naturally philosophy, I'm all for the making things accessible.
And I personally appreciate that. And I know other people do. So thank you everyone for participating. This is fascinating. I'm excited to read about this and or to read the book itself and to continue to hear and hear more about this conversation around authenticity and adaptation. This podcast is supported by the website Adaptation Today, which you can find the link to in our show notes. To keep up with Adaptation Today, visit our website, adaptationtoday.com. Join our listserv where you can stay up to date on all the news in the field. Make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast.